This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area, Friday, October 12, 2012. Secretary of State Scott Gessler continues to be embroiled in controversy. The Denver Post reports that Gessler's return trip from the Republican National Convention was paid for by the state. Gessler says he used state money for the trip because his family received death threats over his position as the state's elections administrator, and he needed to return home quickly. According to the Post, the expense report, which also includes a trip to Washington, D.C., came to light as the result of an open records request by David Palladino, a Democrat running for the state Senate. State law prohibits using state funds for anything but, quote, official state business purposes. Yesterday's KVNF Capitol reporter Benta Berkland reported on challenges from Democrats at the State House who say they plan to introduce legislation in the next session to rein Gessler in. The Goblin Fire north of Durango is now estimated at 525 acres. According to fire officials, firefighters have been able to keep the fire away from the river and railroad tracks, and train operations on the Durango and Silverton Narrow Gauge Railroad are on schedule. The wildfire is burning on steep, inaccessible slopes in the Weminuche Wilderness. No structures are threatened at this time. Fire officials are expecting precipitation from the storm system arriving today to aid in fire suppression. Delta Montrose Electric Association's wholesale power provider is once again raising its rates, and DMEA isn't yet sure how they'll handle the increase. This is the second year in a row Tri-State Generation and Transmission Association has raised its rates by nearly 5%. The Watch reports that before this year, Tri-State's wholesale power rate was steady for 2 years. This year, Tri-State raised their rate by 4.8% and recently announced they will bump their rates up again by 4.9% in 2013. Tri-State also provides power to San Miguel Power Association. Tri-State spokesman Jim Van Summeren told the Watch that the increase is due to rising costs for power production, purchased power, and transmission operation and maintenance costs. The Watch reports that Tri-State is also subject to rising regulatory costs for increased general and administrative overhead due to proposed rules and regulations in the environmental, legal, and government arenas. The Watch reports that the rising costs suggests that coal-fired energy is no longer the cheapest form of energy production for Tri-State's consumers. San Miguel Power Association board member Wes Perrin told the Watch that it is misguided to criticize the federal government and the Environmental Protection Agency for being perceived as anti-coal. Rather, he says, they are anti-carbon. Perrin added that in his opinion, quote, "We have come to a point in time where we have realized there are costs attached to fossil fuel production, and they are being borne by the public at large." Perrin told the Watch that the actual costs of coal on the world market will continue to increase. And with natural gas prices continually dropping, he thinks now would be a good time for Tri-State to take a step back and reevaluate how it provides power to its cooperatives. Stay tuned to KVNF for more on this story in the coming weeks. Hunting season is upon us, and the Western Slope is now playing host to thousands of local and out-of-state hunters intent on bagging a deer, elk, or other game. The first rifle season starts tomorrow, and KVNF's Ariana Brocious spoke with Colorado Parks and Wildlife District Manager Kirk Madriaga about what the big game season looks like on the Western Slope.
Rifle season starts this Saturday, and the first rifle season. What is in store for hunters? What's the word from Colorado Parks and Wildlife?
We anticipate a pretty successful season. We have not had any bad weather, winter weather, to knock herds back in quite a while. So we've had really pretty good success with our populations. And so based on what I've talked to the archery people and the muzzleloader people that I've talked to, they've had pretty good success too. So we anticipate a very good season this year.
Right. Last year was a pretty mild winter. So does that mean that we're seeing even higher populations than normal, or are they about where they have been for a few years?
They're probably about where they have been. We had one bad winter a few years ago that really knocked some of the populations back, but that was several years ago, and our populations have been building again from that. So we're about where we normally are, I would say.
I know we draw a lot of people from out of state that come in as well to hunt, and have you been seeing those people come through?
Yes, I have. I have a little game I play in hunting season to see how many different license plates I can get. And in the archery season, I had 26. And usually I get around 48. We get people from everywhere.
I know we have a lot of hunters out there, some who do archery or muzzleloading, some who do rifle. Where are the areas on the western slope that are really prime habitat or prime hunting grounds?
Well, most of the western slope is very good for hunting elk and deer both. It just kind of depends on what kind of terrain people want to hunt in, whether they want to hunt in the southwest corner where it's very rugged and big tall mountains, or they want to hunt somewhere like here where it's a little less rugged in most of the country and it's more rolling. It just varies immensely. Our White River National Forest area has one of the largest herds in the state, and lots of people like to hunt up there too.
So another thing that we had this year was a lot of fire, a lot of wildfires, and I know that there's one area up near Meeker that is currently closed. Part of the hunting unit is closed because of an ongoing wildfire, but that aside, has the fire really impacted the hunting out here?
We haven't seen a lot of impact from fire overall. We don't anticipate that to be much of a problem as far as our hunting success, except for in those areas that are freshly burned.
Are there still licenses available for people who haven't gotten one yet?
Yes, there are. In our second and third rifle seasons, we do offer elk licenses over-the-counter, unlimited, for bulls, and those are on sale up until the day before the hunt, and then they are available for purchase after the season starts at one of our offices. They do have to have a hunter safety card. We do have some leftover licenses available also. They're running out, but you can find them on our website.
Well, it's an exciting time, right?
For
hunters out here, it's kind of ramping up. And National Weather Service has said there's a storm coming in. So something to be aware of, I guess, if you're going to head out this weekend.
Yes, it is. We encourage utmost safety of our participants. We are always patrolling during those seasons of snow and weather, but people do get in trouble, so they do need to be aware of that. But also don't let your guard down with fire either, because even if it is rainy, it's so dry now that it can dry out in a day or two. And we really want to stress we don't want any wildfires either. So, and then for the non-hunters during the weeks of this hunting season, we do recommend they wear some blaze orange of some sort if they're going to be out in the woods, and just for their protection. Very, very, very seldom do we have anybody hurt by another hunter, but especially since we do have the blaze orange requirements on our hunters, they all are looking for blaze orange to warn them of each other. So we do recommend if people are going to be out walking, do wear a little bit of blaze orange so other hunters are aware you're not something other than a person.
Good advice. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Kirk.
You're welcome.
The annual One Step Closer to Help and Hope Walk and Run takes place tomorrow morning in Montrose, raising money for the local Bosom Buddies Breast Cancer Program. The walk-run-bike event starts at 9 a.m. at the Montrose Pavilion. Registration starts at 8 a.m. Runners can choose from a 5K or a 10K course, and bikers will ride a 12K course that starts and finishes at the pavilion. A map of the course will be available tomorrow. And now for the latest edition of the Western Slope Skies, produced by KVNF and the Black Canyon Astronomical Society.
One summer, when I was growing up, it was common to hear about sightings of the Northern Lights over Grand Mesa. Most of the stories came from high school kids staying out too late on dates. At the time, I scoffed at those stories, but have since learned that that summer happened to be during a particularly active sun cycle. auroras, or northern lights, occur when charged particles from solar storms are caught up in Earth's magnetic field and energize nitrogen and oxygen atoms in the upper atmosphere. These excited atoms glow in pillars and curtains of green, red, and even pink. Right now, the sun is near the peak of its 11-year activity cycle. Usually, auroras are only seen north of 45 degrees latitude. But a giant solar storm this fall could make auroras visible from locations as far south as Mexico, including the western slope. Here, auroras would appear just above the northern horizon. They're best observed on clear, dark nights away from lights. To find out when to look for them, listen for news alerts or check the auroral map on the NOAA Space Weather Now website. If you aren't lucky enough to catch a northern light show from the western slope, you can often view real-time auroras on the Canadian Space Agency's Aurora Max All-Sky Camera, which broadcasts nightly from Yellowknife during fall and winter. You have been listening to Western Slope Skies, produced by members of the Black Canyon Astronomical Society. I'm Joyce Tanihara.
This concludes the morning newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria.